This is Friday on the Other Side on Mind Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Fridays, we take a look at experiences and concepts that you might not think have a mental health component, but in fact, they do.
And today we've certainly got an expert available, so we're going to meet her right now. Her name is Felicia Drury Clement, and she is an alternative health consultant, and she's written many articles on psychological issues, and she's written many articles on the emotionally disturbed. Her previous books include The Acid-Alkaline Balanced Diet, Eat Right for Your Metabolism, and she is here with us today to discuss The Subconscious, Your Port in the Storm. Felicia, welcome to Mind Talk.
Well, it's very good to be here. I'm happy to be with you today.
Well, you certainly have done a great deal of writing about a great many things. Why write about the subconscious, and what is the subconscious anyway?
Okay. People say, "What? Here you are writing about alternative health issues, and then suddenly you switch to the subconscious." You know, it doesn't seem as though there's a connection, but if you go back in history, way back even to the medieval era, you find that health, the herbalists were almost always also psychics. And not that the subconscious is psychic, but there is, of course, a close relationship. So there's a spiritual aspect to healing. And I suppose that's why I lit upon the subconscious. Also, I was a great fan of Carl Gustav Jung. I read all his books, and I suppose he, in the beginning, kind of piqued my interest in the subconscious.
Well,
and as far as...
What exactly is your definition of the subconscious? What are we talking about?
Okay, the subconscious is the other mind we have. It's often referred to as the inner mind, and when we say... I have a feeling, or I intuitively know, we don't maybe realize it, but we're talking about the subconscious, that we're tapping into the subconscious and getting ideas or information that our conscious mind wasn't able to provide for us. Now, the interesting thing about the subconscious, and you know, there have been hundreds of studies which have proven its existence. I mean, there's no question it does exist. It is a real thing, is that it thinks very differently than we do. We tend to think, sort of in a scientific way, cause and effect, whereas the subconscious thinks in terms of connecting things that are like things are connected. Anything that's unlike is sort of discarded and thrown to the side. Now, I see a great advantage in this different way of thinking. If we can't solve a problem consciously, that is, with the way the conscious mind solves a problem, cause and effect, we hopefully the subconscious will pitch in and be able to solve it with its way of thinking. Now, I'd like to describe a study that I thought was quite clever. It not only that it proves the existence of the subconscious, but it also shows how the subconscious thinks.
Yes.
This study was done at Yale, and the subjects were students, and it was done in the form of a skit. Some of the students acted as waiters, and others as students. Now, the waiters were carrying trays, and on the trays were a lot of books plus a mug of coffee. And the students were told to go up to one waiter, and the waiter would say, this is a very heavy tray. Would you please take the mug of coffee off? And this was acted out, and that was the end of the skit. Then the researchers asked the students who had taken the mug of coffee off the waiter's tray, how would they describe the moral character of this waiter? Well, obviously, how would they know? The waiter was a stranger.
Right.
All the waiter said was, would you please remove the cup of coffee? So unbeknownst to the student's conscious mind, the subconscious kicked in. And in fact, it kicked in with all of the students. And this is how they judge the moral character of the waiter. If the mug of coffee was hot that the waiter had on his tray, the student said that waiter had a warm-hearted character, was warm and kind. If the mug of coffee was cold, the student said the waiter was cold-hearted and mean. Now, you know, the student didn't know consciously because it was a subconscious that came to this conclusion. The subconscious did so with its way of thinking, which was to match up likenesses. Cold cold, physical coldness with moral coldness, and physical heat with a warmth and a good moral character. So I thought that was a very interesting study.
Well, it's a fascinating study.
Yes.
What do we do with that when we, you know, if I'm thinking consciously about, I don't know, whether I should say hello to Sally or say nothing to Sally, where and how does my subconscious kick in there?
Well, if you suddenly, I mean, subconscious, let me say, doesn't always kick in when we need it. And we'll later discuss how we can sort of change our way of thinking so that we get more contact with the subconscious. But let's say you're right. You're walking down the street and you see Sally, and you know you never really liked her, but you know you're going to face her. And what should you do? Ignore her or say hello? If your conscious mind can't think of what to do, very often your subconscious will kick in. Now, sometimes what might happen to interfere with your subconscious taking over from your consciousness, which can't make up its mind, is if you get very emotional, you know, if you're an impulsive kind of person and you get kind of nervous and anxious, then your subconscious is less likely to kick in to help you out.
I see.
Then what usually happens is you make a faux pas, you know, because your consciousness can't think of the right thing to do.
When you refer to another study that I thought was interesting at Northwestern University in 2006.
Yeah.
And that was a study where students were asked to disclose an unethical act. Can you tell us about that study?
Yeah, I'm not quite as familiar, but I do remember. I remember it kind of vaguely. Did they ever commit an unethical act? And the students who said they did, they were then awarded a gift. And those who did chose a gift that, a handy wipe, I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
Almost as though metaphorically wiping out their sin, the sin that they had committed.
Right.
Whereas the students who said, no, I just don't remember ever performing an unethical act, which doesn't mean that they didn't, but that
right.
they honestly didn't remember doing so, they chose a pencil, which I thought was fascinating.
Well, it's interesting because a pencil, you know, it's a tool. It allows you to further express. I mean, you know, a pencil, it can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Whereas
it's a kind of neutral gift, isn't it?
And with an antiseptic, I mean, clearly what you're doing is you're trying to clean something up.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And maybe it indicates a little bit of guilt. And, you know, how we think some people have the sense of guilt and some people don't, but I have a feeling everybody does because everybody that described an immoral act that they had performed sometime in their life, they all picked the antiseptic wipe.
That's
so
really interesting.
That tells us that it's funny, that the world isn't better than it is, because we all are born with a conscience.
The idea that the way to really sort of attend to your subconscious awareness is to learn how to focus. I think that's what you're saying. So I'm going to go back to Sally walking down the street. And, you know, I don't really like her. I'm feeling kind of some kind of way about Sally.
Mm-hmm.
And I really am sort of stumped in terms of what I want to do or not do. And you're saying that if I'm too anxious about it, then I really may not have access to my subconscious.
That's right. And that's one of the rules I've devised in reaching the subconscious is to try to be as calm as possible. I know it's easier said than done. But if you can get yourself in a state of calmness, contentment, that's one sure avenue. That will remove any roadblock that you have to the subconscious. I mean, there are loads of ways of getting to the subconscious. One is to realize that we all have times and places where we feel more calm and content than other times and places.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to think, well, what day of the week am I happiest and most content? You know, and or what time of day? Is it in the morning when I wake up, or in the evening when I'm finished work? And you know, what day of the week? Maybe Friday, because the work the work week, the part of the week when your work is over, and you have a weekend to look forward to. And it's a lot of things. What space do I feel most comfortable? You know, it's very important when you're looking, shopping around for an apartment or a house to find something, not just that is maybe a good buy or something that's beautiful, but how do we feel? Do you, when you walk in, do you say, hey, this is it, I feel totally comfortable in this room and in this house, or not? So that's another way of reaching the subconscious. Find out when those times when you're calm and content, and then think about the subconscious. Now, here's the tricky part. You can't ask the subconscious. You know, like people who are religious pray to God for what they want. Well, you can't do that with the subconscious. If you say, hey, subconscious, please help me out here, the subconscious won't listen. I don't know if it's because it's perverse or what. but you can think, just think about the subconscious. Maybe pick up a book and read about the subconscious. Have it on your mind during those times when you feel calm. What else? You can also sharpen to reach the subconscious. You can sharpen your senses. I don't know if you read in my book about this started out as a little boy. His grandfather must have been very intuitive because he had made up his mind to develop the sense of sight and even hearing of his little grandson. Mm-hmm. And he would take him on long walks, and he'd point something at him, like a statue, and say, look at the statue. Notice the ears, or notice the hair, and describe it to me. And he sharpened that little boy's senses so that it really prepared him for life, and he's had a very successful life because of that. He said whenever it comes to make a decision, he never makes any effort to think out the problem. He lets the subconscious do the thinking for him, and the subconscious always comes out with the right solution. The other interesting thing that happened to him, because he had such a close connection with the subconscious, is he started having what he describes as psychic intuitive experiences. Hmm. For instance, when he was a young man, and he was a student in Mexico, and he was in Mexico City and sitting in a cafe sipping coffee with his friends, and he suddenly said, and this was out of the blue, there will be an earthquake. And he doesn't know why he said it, it was a statement that kind of flowed out of his mouth. And what happened suddenly, the street started kind of undulating and everything started shaking, and that was the earthquake. He had predicted it, and only minutes later the earthquake happened. So it's interesting where the subconscious can take us. It can even take us down the psychic road, and that can bring us even more good things.
And now it's interesting that you're bringing up, you know, psychic skills, because as you know, there are probably just as many people who think that that's a bunch of nonsense as there are people who absolutely live their lives by it. I'm going to go back to making contact with the subconscious and then move forward again to sort of psychic options that people may be able to access. It sounds like you're saying, in terms of making contact with your own subconscious, is that you need to be really much more, what's the word, perhaps intentional or focused on you, on what's really true for you. What time of day is better for you?
Yeah.
What weather do you prefer? What season do you prefer? What physical space do you prefer? Do you find that people are able to do that, or do you find that people kind of struggle with getting that kind of specificity about themselves?
I don't know. You know, I find that what helps people the most, you know, and with all these various suggestions that I make and that can be helpful if you can carry them out, is just thinking about the subconscious. First of all, I think most people will admit these days its existence, but admitting that it can have a great influence on your life. Think about it all the time, and when you have what I call a meaningful coincidence, you can acknowledge it. You know, be on the lookout for these meaningful coincidences, because I believe that that's a sign from the subconscious that you are on the right path in life, the preordained path that I believe everyone is born with, that you're following it, that you're doing what's right.
So give me an example of a meaningful coincidence.
Yeah, I was, you know, I was thinking, I'll give one that's a little, maybe a little involved, but it's one that still astounds me to this day. I'd read, it was an article in the New York Times about a famous Chinese composer of operas by the name of Tan Dun. I don't know if you've ever seen any of his operas. They're very kind of almost abstract, and yet they're based, a lot of them, on the very earliest Chinese history when nature played a great part in life. Well, he talked about, Tan Dun said he talked to a shaman, and that the shaman told him, and Tan Dun was very impressed with this, that he could talk to the clouds and the wind. Now, that kind of took my interest, and I'd thrown the article away, but I'd forgotten what two forces in nature Tan Dun's shaman could talk to. I thought, oh, what am I going to do? I threw the paper away. Well, a little while after, I got up and walked over to my bookcase. I didn't know why I did it. You know, I just ambled over, and a bookcase with literally hundreds of books, and I took out one book, a big, fat volume of Spengler's Decline of the West, my favorite philosopher, and in my hands, it just kind of flipped open. It was over a 1,000-page book, and I glanced right at, it was a left-hand page, I still remember the fourth paragraph, the first line, and there was this phrase I'd been looking for. Primitive religions have something to do with the clouds. I don't remember the middle, but the phrase ended, clouds and the wind. There it was. The phrase I was looking for, I'd forgotten, and I'd thrown the newspaper away that the phrase was in, and somehow my subconscious, how did it find clouds and wind? How did the subconscious find this among my hundreds of books? Which book, and then which page on the book, and then which paragraph? I'm still astounded by that.
But you know, that almost sounds magical, mystical. Yes. You kind of have to, well, I guess that's what you're saying. You have to be open to having that kind of experience, and not everybody, for tons of different reasons, not everybody would be. And you have to be able to interpret what happens in the way that you just did.
You're right. But it also tells me that there is sometimes a connection between the subconscious and psychic power, that sometimes maybe they work together. I mean, I don't know how the subconscious alone could have found this phrase among these hundreds of books on my bookcase, or even knew that it was there. You know, I can't help but feel that the subconscious sometimes taps into a psychic power to come forth with the solution to a problem that we're having.
Is it your belief that everyone has a psychic power?
I think so, because first of all, everyone has a subconscious.
Right.
And the subconscious, with everybody, the subconscious helps that person out, not as much maybe as it should, especially if that person is not aware of the subconscious or is skeptical. Maybe leave in the subconscious, but can't believe that the subconscious actually helps the conscious brain out. I think it's very possible to develop your subconscious and to develop these connections. And, you know, I have many, many good suggestions in the book, but in the end, it's a belief that subconscious can help you out. And when you start having these little meaningful coincidences, and, you know, the most common one, I'm sure you've had it, and practically everyone I know has had it, is the telephone rings, and intuitively you know who that is at the end of the line. Or you start thinking of somebody, and the telephone rings, and you know that somebody you were thinking of is calling you.
You know, I'm laughing because that happens so often to so many people. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to really sort of focus in on the ways to focus and eliminate the negatives, which is one of the things that you say is really important in terms of accessing and really kind of celebrating, I think, your subconscious awareness. So, folks, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will continue with The Subconscious, Your Port in the Storm by Felicia Drury Clement. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Felicia, you say that, and I am now quoting you, a key yes. to the subconscious superior problem-solving ability is focusing. So let's talk about focusing. How do you do that? What does that look like? Earlier, we talked about you're making contact mm-hmm. with the subconscious, and you yeah. and you asked that folks include time of day, weather, season. So does that mean mm-hmm. that there's only a particular time that you can focus, or can you focus all the time, or walk us through focus?
Well, you know, I think focusing on the subconscious, just thinking about it, lots of times, you know, it can be you're thinking about the subconscious in a way can be semi-conscious. You can be in both a conscious state and a subconscious state. You know, there can be, and this is, I think, the longer you go with the efforts of reaching your subconscious and letting it guide you through life, is the more likely it is that you can be in that wonderful sort of intermediary state of consciousness and subconsciousness. Now, I wonder, you know, Dr. Brewer, if I can talk something about a question that is asked me quite often. That is, why is our subconscious wiser than we are? And I don't know, have you ever thought about that or wondered?
Well, you know, I'd be curious to hear your answer.
Okay. Well, for one thing, the subconscious has far more information. I mean, thousands, trillions more information than our conscious brain. Our conscious brain has an archive of memories that consists only of the events that have happened during our lifetime. And so that's all we have as a backup to help us make decisions. Whereas the subconscious has our ancestral history, our racial history, our national history. In fact, some people refer to the subconscious as a micro-universe. I mean, these are philosophers, you know, brilliant thinkers that do that, that it's a micro-universe in the sense that everything that has ever happened, in not just in our world, but in the universe, exists within the subconscious. So, you know, we have this wonderful, wonderful backup of unlimited knowledge, which if we are smart enough to get in contact with the subconscious, we can tap into. You know, the Chinese describe the subconscious as a treasury of ancient memories that are recycled with every new generation. You know, so, you know, when we're at a loss, not knowing what to do, where to turn, provided we are mentally in balance in that state of calm that I talked about, our subconscious will kick in and relay to us, you know, the decisions or the solutions to our problems. Now, another reason for the subconscious wise, the fact that it can make better decisions as a whole than we can, and there are lots of studies that back this up, medical studies, is that it's not living our life the way we are. You know, we are embroiled in our everyday life,
right.
And the subconscious is sitting back, kind of has a ringside seat, eavesdropping on us. So it can retain an objectivity that we can't. You know, living through life and trying to satisfy our ego, which is always a big problem and holds us back a lot of times from contact with the subconscious, is a detriment. I mean, we have to live our life. We can't just sit in a rocking chair in a corner, and it wouldn't be right if we didn't. But the subconscious, as an observer, we are the actors in this play of life, and the subconscious is the observer. And that's another reason. Now, in the act of playing out our life, we're subjects not only to any good innate ideas we're born with, innate ideas being from the subconscious, we join various, we're part of various organizations. First, the family, the church, school, the workplace, and various other organizations. And each one has a set of moral values of its own that differs from the moral values of other organizations and undoubtedly differs from the innate moral sense that we were born with. So we end up a little confused.
I was going to say, that could be very challenging to try to sort of figure all of that out and make it make sense for the individual.
That's right. It's, you know, to go from one organization to another and to get along within an organization, you kind of have to accept the ideas. And in the end, we're left with this tangle of different ideas. Well, how do we disentangle it and focus in and then discard it and get back to the ideas we were born with, which coming from the subconscious are based on these vast experiences that have taken place and events that have taken place in the world and in the universe.
Well, again, how do you get there? Because we live in, honestly, a very crowded world these days. Yes. It really is a 25-8 world almost. And, you know, there's not a lot of space necessarily to do the focusing, to even think about the subconscious, to allow yourself that space to go there. I would think it would create anxiety in some people to let themselves go to that sense of calm and focus. So I guess, again, I ask the same question, which is, how do you do this? How do you get there?
Okay, here's another thing. When you suddenly, let's say you have an idea or you do something, it's kind of out of character. Even if it's in character, you always ask yourself, hey, was this me or was it my subconscious? That's a great help in connecting with your self-confidence. You know, when you suddenly get an idea out of the blue, and you say, my gosh, wasn't I clever? This is a great idea. Well, you weren't really clever at all. It was your subconscious that came up with the idea. So don't give yourself credit for it.
keep that ego in check. Damn, girl.
That's right. It's the ego. And, you know, another, where else do we experience, or in what circumstances do we experience our subconscious? Let's say we decide to take up a new sport. Let's say ice hockey. God forbid, at my age, I have to take up ice hockey. But anyway, and we're working at it, and, you know, it takes a lot of effort. We're not naturally athletic, and we struggle, and we finally achieve a skill. It may not be a professional skill, but it's the best skill that we can come up with. At that point, the subconscious imprints, takes that skill into its vast archives and keeps it there. And then whenever you play ice hockey, those subconscious skills go into play. In other words, when you're making an effort learning something, that's strictly your conscious mind.
Okay.
But then when you learn something as perfectly as you can, your subconscious takes over, and when you act out whatever you've just learned, the subconscious is there to help you out. It's kind of good when you know these things to think, gee, I'm making such an effort, maybe it's worth it to, I was about to give up, but, you know, I think it's probably worth it to see if I can acquire this skill, because then I can just sit back and relax and let my subconscious continue to help me, or not continue, because the subconscious, of course, doesn't help you until you acquire the skill. So, you know, I have this feeling that the subconscious, with its vast memories, is kind of very particular about what it wants to keep in its memory archives. It'll keep skills there, but it's not going to keep mistakes. You know, any mistakes you made, and I'm thinking, when you're learning something, you're making a lot of mistakes,
right,
aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, those mistakes don't go into your subconscious. It has the solutions that are valid. And one valid solution is learning a skill, and learning it as best you can.
So you're saying that the subconscious tends to, that it eliminates the negatives and holds
on
to the positives?
You're right about that. And, yeah, you asked me before, and I thought it was a very good question. Let's talk about the negatives, you said, and it sort of just naturally come up here, that the subconscious only has really valid ideas and information in its archives to give us when we hopefully are able to tap into it.
And the tapping into it, if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, mm-hmm. it's not mm-hmm. necessarily this wild and crazy thing that you've got to elaborately do. It may be a matter of standing still and listening to yourself.
That's right. Standing still and listening. I mean, there's a lot of not meditation exactly, but there's a lot of self-analysis. And it's a little a bit of a paradox, because one thing that keeps us from the subconscious is our ego, you know, our wish to prove ourselves, I hate to say it, better than other people. You know, we're always, or if somebody isn't that friendly, you know, we're taken aback, feel a little sensitive and say, hey, you know, don't they like me? I mean, we're too concerned with the self, and that is one of the big roadblocks to the subconscious. On the other hand, we have to give a lot of thought to ourselves to reach the subconscious. So, you know, this is a tricky thing in a way.
But it sounds like you're saying we're too concerned about the self as it relates to others versus the self as it relates to self.
You know, that is a very... I'm going to write that down. It's a very good point.
You may.
Yes. Thank you.
Because if I'm concerned about self as it relates to others, as you said, I'm worried about what others think about me, how they see me, blah, 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 blah. Whereas if I'm just being more internal, other people aren't there.
That's right. And, you know, another thing is, you know, you think about yourself, and I look back and what I've accomplished and what I want to accomplish, you know, and I always think, gee, by the end of my life, I mean, I believe in reincarnation, but by the end of my life, I hope to accomplish all of my goals. And in a way, you know, that's a good thing. They've done studies and show that people who are older, and especially people in their 80s and 90s, that if they still have goals in mind, they're healthier and they live longer.
Mm.
So that's another thing. We don't want to be so goal obsessive that we block the subconscious. On the other hand, we want to have goals, but we want to pursue them without angst, without this sort of desperation that, oh, what will happen if we don't get this book published or get this executive position or so on. So it's, you know, we're straddling here. It's like sitting on a fence, and we can go either way. But, you know, if we just remember calmness, contentment, thinking about the subconscious, not necessarily, oh, how is it going to help us, but just the wonders of the subconscious and all this wonderful information and wisdom that it holds. And we think of the subconscious as kind of a parent, let's say the mother hen, and we're the little chick, and it's there to, you know, if we get this sense that we have this wonderful protective, I'm going to say person, even, you know, some people are connected with the subconscious, and they can only be so if they personify it.
Okay.
I want to give an example, and it's something that I just read in the Saturday or the weekend New York Times. And it's a long, interesting article about a 93-year-old man who works 10, 12 hours a day. He's a filmmaker, and he has a million friends. His life is exactly as it was when he was 30 years old.
Okay.
And of course, the reporter asked him, "How do you explain this? How have you? I mean, it's enough of an achievement to get to be 93, let alone to be 93 and act like you're 20." And this is what he said. He said, "Since I landed in New York, I always managed to survive. Always something came. Angels are watching. If I can't figure it out, angels will figure it out. I just do every day what I do." See, he's saying, oh, yeah, I just do whatever comes along, I do it, calmly and methodically. But the angel is there to help him. Now, what he's done, and I don't think he even realizes it, he's personified his subconscious. He can connect it with better if he thinks of the subconscious as an angel. And if that's what you have to do to reach the subconscious, so be it. I think it's very nice, really.
You know, it also sounds, though, as though the person doing the kind of work that you're describing has to have a reasonably positive sense of themselves.
Oh, yes.
Not to be afraid, quite frankly.
That's right. That's right. He has a positive sense of himself. Let me tell you a little story about my granddaughter. My granddaughter is very brilliant. She's now 21. But she suffered from depression throughout her school life, and I was a horrendous worry for me, her grandmother. She had no friends. She was desperately shy. She had no friends.
Mm.
And, you know, it was, as I said, a terrible worry. Well, after she graduated from high school, she did a little college, and she wanted to move in with me in New York. She lives in Seattle. She moved in for a few months. She hated New York. It turned out to be a very good experience because she then appreciated her life in Seattle. And I was just finishing up my book on the subconscious, and I asked her to read it over and make suggestions, and she added some really brilliant thoughts. And after she got home, she said, you know, I looked and read the subconscious to see what I could do to maybe add to it or even improve it, but that's all. She said, now I'm going to read it just to enjoy it and see what I can get out of it. She read the whole thing, and this is amazing because this was 2 years ago. She lost all of her depression. She hasn't been depressed one day since she read the book through. And why? Well, maybe she has a job she likes and so on. But I have a feeling that it just reading about the subconscious has brought the subconscious into her life. Mm-hmm. It's something that she thinks about all the time, and it supplied whatever she needed to become a cheerful, happy person, which she is now.
Well, you know, part of what you do throughout the book, it seems to me, is invite the reader to acknowledge that they really do have skills and awareness, that they really can be still and get information that is useful for them. And my thought is that by continually giving that message to the reader, what you may have been doing for your granddaughter is continually letting her know that she actually could do what her depression scared her into believing she couldn't do.
You know, that's a good point. Yeah, that she could. Yes, that's right. So that if she just stopped being depressed, she could go forward with her life. And that's what's happened.
And you know, the thing about depression, I mean, it's so different for everyone, and for some people, reading a book could actually be useful, and for others, not so much. So, you know, we don't want to give out the impression that if you can't change it after having read a book, there's something wrong, and then you get to feel worse about yourself. But it really is different for different people. And if you are in a space in your life where you can take in sort of an awareness of having positive self-regard and the power of that, that's a wonderful place to be and a powerful place to be.
Yes, it is. And you're right. You read the book and you take from that book what will help you. Obviously, not everything or even a fraction of what's in the book will. But given your particular personality makeup, your consciousness and subconscious, you're going to pick up on certain things. And not pick up on those things that can't help you.
Right.
Now, we're talking about different ways in which we can contact the subconscious, what we can do to somehow get linked up with it. One thing I haven't mentioned is the use of a medium. Sometimes you need a medium. A medium. You need a link of some kind between your conscious mind and your subconscious, that you somehow can't sometimes make that leap without the help of a medium. Almost like, you know, there's a stream with a bridge over it. Well, you can't get to the other side of the stream or the river unless you cross the bridge. Well, so it's a bridge.
When you say you say that you need a medium, you know what comes up for me, and we'll explore this further after the break, but what comes up for me is the lady with the turban and the crystal ball the curtain. So when we come back from the break, I need you to tell us what you mean when you say a medium.
Okay.
All righty. Mm-hmm. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We'll be right back. Alicia, when you talk about a medium, do I need to go out and grab the lady with the turban and the crystal ball?
No, not at all. Let me give you an example of a medium that I'm sure you're aware of, and that is the water dowser, sometimes called the water diviner.
Mm.
You know, when farmers need water for their crops, they hire a dowser to locate underground water, and the dowser or diviner has a forked stick, a wooden made out of wood, with which he touches the ground, and when the stick begins to tremble, it's a sign there's water directly underneath it in the ground. And, you know, not everybody, someone said, well, gee, can anyone do this? Well, no, you know, you have to have some kind of special, I can't say psychic, but maybe psychic intuitiveness to be able to be a water diviner.
Okay.
Now, to give another very different kind of example, I have a friend, John, who was very fond of his late grandmother. And he often visits her grave. Well, on one visit, a small stone next to her grave caught his eye. He didn't know why, but he picked it up, and he keeps it in his pocket at all times. He always has it in his pocket, and he says it has a calming effect, and he attributes this to the fact that it reconnects him to his grandmother. So the medium, obviously, is something that can connect us with whatever we want to be connected with. And of course, the subconscious plays a part.
And it sounds like it means different things for different people.
It means different things to that, exactly. And okay. You know, that reminds me of a friend I had who, one summer between college, he worked in a hardware store, and he said, "You know, I've never been able to figure." This was years and years. He was in his 50s at this time, and he said, "You know, I still think of this, and I cannot figure this out." When a customer comes in and asks me for any little anything, even something, a screw, any tiny thing, I go directly to the drawer where it is and pick it out, and there it is. But if I want to find something myself, I can't do it. I don't remember where it is. And he said, "What is this?" And I figure that he needs a medium to find what he needs in that hardware store, and the medium in this case is the customer.
Okay.
You know, maybe let's say he needs a hammer and he can't find it, and he could ask the customer, "Would you ask me for a hammer?" And then he could find it. But this is another case where he needs a medium to find what he wants.
Let me switch gears a little bit to dreaming. I know I've certainly done some work in my practice with folks around the issue of dreaming, and we talk about the way that the Greeks used to use dreams as a method of identifying medical issues sometimes, as well as problem solving. So so let's just talk about when you talked about a lucid dreamer, your internal dream catcher. What did you mean when you referred to this? What are you saying?
Well, the lucid dreamer is someone who is aware while they're dreaming. They're dreaming, but they're conscious that they're dreaming. I mean, you know, when we're dreaming, I dream every night. But I'm not conscious of it while I'm dreaming. In fact, I don't even remember my dreams when I wake up. But the lucid dreamer the great thing is, because the lucid dreamer is aware, he's kind of observing. You know, the way I say the subconscious is observing the consciousness sitting on the sidelines. Well, these lucid dreamers are sitting there watching, like they're watching a movie, watching their dreams. And they can learn, and this is very useful, they can learn how to manipulate their dreams. They can change the plot. They can add to the plot or take away from it. And this has a great effect on healing any mental problems that the lucid dreamer has. It's a great technique for relieving and even getting rid of neuroses. That's the charm. I mean, you can, and actually people who dream a lot and remember their dreams can become lucid dreamers. And the first thing, if you want to become a lucid dreamer, the first thing you start doing is, as soon as you wake up, you have a pencil, pen and paper on the nightstand beside your bed, you write down your dreams. Okay, because the first step in becoming a lucid dreamer is to remember your dreams.
Right.
And when you start remembering them, the next step, of course, has to kind of go on its own, which is being conscious while you're dreaming, being aware of your dreams while you're dreaming.
So even our dreams, which is something that is uniquely ours, is something that can be useful to us in ways that many people often dismiss at this point.
You know, you're right, and I had that you are reminding me of a dream experience that I had. I had a very difficult mother. She was temperamental, and I have to say I wasn't too fond of her. In fact, I resented her a great deal. She died, and after she died, I continued to, I was hoping I would lose my resentment, but I didn't. Mm. I still resented her. And then one night, I had a dream. The interesting thing is I don't remember my dreams, but this one I remembered very clearly. There was my mother. I could see the image of my mother. She was crying, and she told me why. She said, "I'm crying because I was hoping that after I died, this resentment you had for me would disappear, and we would reconnect as we had when you were a child." And after that dream, I lost all my resentment to my mother.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that dream had a very useful effect because it's not fun to resent.
Well, no, and you were able to experience your mother in a different way in the dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I often wondered, was this really my mother? Or was this just my subconscious trying to help me over this? I don't think so. I think I was really connecting with her.
Interesting.
She was on some plane, somewhere in the universe. But despite her great distance from me and the fact that she was, at least in her present life, she was dead and I was alive, she still wanted to connect with me.
And there's something about that just experience that would have softened your heart, so to speak, that sense that she was caring enough to want to reconnect. There are exercises in the book, and there are two that you offer that bring on calmness and objectivity. One is drifting mm-hmm. clouds, and the other one is African wisdom. I'd just like for you to select one and walk us through the process, and that is assuming folks who are listening are not driving. If you're driving while you're listening to this conversation, you can listen to it again when you're in a more stable physical environment. Pick
one
of those.
Okay. Could you please repeat those two techniques for connecting with the subconscious? I didn't quite get what they were.
Okay. Well, one is drifting clouds. And the other one is African wisdom.
Okay, the drifting clouds, that's a great one. I use that myself. Just looking out the window, I'm looking out now here over Central Park, and the sky is blue, but it's full of clouds. And I focus on a cloud, and the clouds are always moving. And I sort of keep my eye on the cloud. I follow the cloud's movements. And that sort of empties my mind of any problems that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could you go in a little bit to the African wisdom technique?
Sure. It says that when a problem arises in a traditional African village, folk wisdom says, "Look up at the sky, because the sky has many answers if you know how to read them." And you go on further to say that the sky's wisdom comes from its impartiality. The implication is that in its vastness and tranquil bluish hue, the sky is unbiased and non-judgmental.
Yeah, that's a wonderful, it's a wonderful way of looking at the sky, and I think there's a lot of truth to it. The sky is, you might even use a metaphor and compare it to the subconscious as an objective part of our life, and so is the sky. It's totally objective because it's just there. It's a being that is there, and any movement or anything it does affects us indirectly. Now, that you're bringing up dreams brings to mind something very interesting about dreams. When the slaves were brought over here, the Africa became slaves, and they knew that here they were on these plantations in the South picking cotton or whatever, and they knew that they would never see their homeland again. They would never have a chance to go back to Africa. So when they went back to Africa, they went back in their dreams.
They
couldn't wait. These slaves couldn't wait to go to sleep at night, because then they were transported to their African homeland, to the veld. And you know, they imagined the cows moving, mooing, and gathering together with other tribal members, and this was a great relief, a great psychic relief to the slaves.
So you're saying the clouds, not clouds, you're saying the dreams,
yes.
Well, clouds too, but dreams can actually be a wonderful healing, calming
yes.
resource. What about for those folks who don't have that experience in their dreams, who actually have nightmares, are afraid to go to sleep?
Well, I think that's a real problem, because I think mainly when I was a child, I had many nightmares.
Mm.
I don't know if you remember when you were young, really young, in childhood, that the dreams were often in technicolor, beautiful color, and they were tend to be cartoon-like, and they were extremes. I had many nightmares, but fortunately I grew out of them, and I think if you have a stable mind, you do grow out of the nightmares. However, I think some people, my husband was one of them, when he was in some way in trouble, he had a nightmare. For instance, he had a boss who was trying to fire him. And during that, fortunately, the boss himself was fired and my husband took his place. But it was a very anxious, anxiety-producing period.
Of course.
Well, my husband's dreams then were real nightmares. He dreamed that lions were circling his house, or when he went out to jog in the morning, lions started chasing him. As soon as that boss was fired, he took his place, no more dreams about lions. So dreams certainly reflect unhappy periods in our lives, don't they?
And fears,
yes.
And
that was fear, just like we would fear a lion chasing us for fear it would catch up with us and start eating us up. That really expressed the fear he felt at the workplace.
Absolutely. That he was going to be chased and consumed
yeah.
by this boss, this powerful
exactly.
boss who wanted to fire him.
I love the way you kind of sum things up in a very picturesque way.
You know, one of the things that I think you're saying throughout our conversation is that it's important to pay attention to self. And
yes.
to really work at being not so much frightened by self, but curious about self.
Yes, that is a good thing. Curiosity rather than fear. Wonderful. Yes.
You also make the point that life is a constant process of growth, and maybe that's a wonderful thing.
Well, that's what life should be. You know, the Germans, I have great respect for, the Germans have a concept of evolution entirely different than the English, the Darwinian, which sees evolution in terms of sort of a very general in terms of how living things evolve into more complex living things, whereas the Germans see evolution as a very individual thing, and they think an individual life should be this, that you work through the idea of a life is to fulfill whatever potential you have, and that it toward the end of your life, when you were very old, what you should have done by then is to fulfill your life, but at the same time maintain the spontaneity that you had in your youth.
Hmm.
I think that's wonderful.
Absolutely. And, you know, if more people were able to understand and appreciate their goals accomplished and maintain
yeah.
the spontaneity,
yes.
That's kind of a very cool thing.
It's a great thing, yeah. I mean, it adds an awful lot of joy and happiness to your life. You're bound to feel content if you've accomplished what you set out to when you started life, but to still have fun, to be able to giggle and laugh and be silly, you know, that's a great thing too, and it's a very health promoting thing.
Absolutely,
laughter, you know,
Absolutely.
Craziness, yeah.
They've done all kinds of studies about the value of laughter in promoting mm-hmm. health. Felicia, for those folks who are listening, I mean, our time has flown away, but for those folks who are listening who are thinking, okay, I got that the subconscious exists, I got that I want to, now what was it I wanted to do first again? Answer that question.
Well, this has been a great experience for me, and I've never had an interviewer who was so adept at summarizing but adding to the summary some wisdom of her own as you.
Well, thank you very much. For the listener, what is it that you want them to think about doing first?
Well, you know what? I would say, first of all, for the listener to just stop and think before you just turn off the phone. I mean, when you just at the end of the program, instead of just suddenly going and doing something else, to sit back and think about what we talked about during
Excellent.
This program.
Excellent.
Think about it for a while.
Excellent.
And then go on from there. Maybe they want to buy the book and explore the subject further.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for spending time with us today. Really has been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it very much, and I'm happy you invited me.
And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. And remember, you can listen to this program or any Mind Talk program on demand at mindtalk.org. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. Thank you very much. The assistant to the executive producer is Lede Battle. Thank you. And remember, Mind Talk is made available to you every day as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work you may choose to do with a licensed or other professional. Mind Talk, again, is available to you at mindtalk.org. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. And remember as well, folks, always remember, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. You take care.